we get the hour underway by welcoming back to the program from Defector Media, defector.com, the great and wonderful David Roth joins us. Hello there, Mr. Roth.
Hey, ma'am. I actually made the mistake of asking Carrie this. How are you doing?
I have been less, as I said before we started today, I've been less stressed waiting for a cancer diagnosis.
I know, man. Like, it's tough because you can literally say that I have not had that experience, and yet I can't imagine it's much less unpleasant.
Yeah.
It's not great, but I feel sort of optimistic in some ways.
I know, and I do too, and yet I'm afraid to speak the words out loud in some way.
Oh, yeah.
Because we got burned. We got burned 4 years ago. I felt pretty safe going in. What did that get me?
I will say that 4 years ago, I was talking to a friend about this earlier today, that I remember 4 years ago not feeling especially certain. I mean, like, I sort of thought, you know, that it was going to go the way that the polls made it seem like it was going to go. But I remember Trump's campaign put out this, like, closing argument ad, and it was a lot of, you know, shuttered factories and, you know, sort of like for sale signs outside of homes. And, you know, it was the American carnage, like the Bannon thread of his argument. And I remember watching it and being like, well, that's kind of true in some ways. Like, things really do suck right now. And the other campaign, you know, Hillary did not really, that wasn't exactly what she was about. She was mostly, I don't remember what her campaign was about. Not being Donald Trump, mostly, I think. And then, but then, like, today, it was this weird disjunction, because Trump's been traveling around doing all these different rallies in, you know, Pennsylvania and Michigan and all that. And so his Twitter feed is like somebody is just posting stuff for him, and they're posting the same, you know, like, thundering nationalist rhetoric about, like, Joe Biden sold you out to China. And then at the same time that's happening, Trump is on stage at a rally being like, Hall & Oates, I never liked them. They were very rude to me. John is a nice man, but Daryl, very rude. And, like, just kind of just doing his Entertainment Tonight thing that he does.
Yeah, as somebody said, it's Festivus. It's just, for the last 3 weeks, it's been simply the airing of grievances.
Yeah, but the grievances are, like, this is the real Trump. Like, the grievances aren't with, like, industrialists or with, like, people who are offshoring jobs. The grievances are with, like, Lady Gaga.
Right. Rosie O'Donnell.
Right. Which is, and he's had the same sort of, like, this is just how he kind of is. It's just like collecting these weird beefs. I mean, that part's not going to stop. But obviously, like, he hasn't let being president distract him from continuing to, like, have opinions about Kristen Stewart's haircut or whatever. Like, that's just never, he's never going to change on that front.
And the tack that some of his people has taken recently has been, well, I have to say, a little bit unusual, whether it was trying to run the Biden-Harris bus off the road in Texas, or then the brilliant move, sure to win people to your side, of shutting down a lane of the Garden State Parkway.
Oh, man. They did a bunch of bridges and highways in the greater tri-state area. I think that one is going to be something that I think about for a long time. I mean, just as somebody who spent a lot of time on the Garden State Parkway, the one thing you want on the Garden State Parkway is to leave the Garden State Parkway. Anything and anybody that makes you have to be on there longer than you already have to be is, like, that's a lifetime enemy status thing.
But isn't
the idea that, I don't even think it wasn't about persuading people, I don't think. I mean, I think it was just about annoying them, which, again, is, like, the perfect place to be at the end of this campaign.
Right, that's been their mantra for 3.5 years, is sticking it to the libs.
Yeah, and trying to, like, the thing with that that's kind of confusing, though, is that, like, at some point, like, you know, if you want something that you think that they have, you know, like, if you want their power or their influence or, you know, the ability to greenlight sitcoms or whatever it is that you're putting on the liberal elite that you believe that you don't have yourself, like, at some point, you should have a thing that you want. Like, this is what I think is so perfect about those protests, is that it's just, like, it's just being annoying. Like, it's just, like, laying on your car horn outside someone's house in the hope that, like, they'll hear it and become annoyed. But that's the whole argument.
Right. There's no plan for tomorrow. There's no better days ahead other than the vague, you know, we'll be great again. But and the most fascinating thing we've seen in this campaign is a president showing pictures of a devastated America and suggesting that that's the future if you elect the other guy.
It's so wild. I mean, but this is, that's the thing with, I think, that like has been the weirdest thing about Trump all along. Not just that he hasn't changed anything about his life or how he lives it for, you know, for ascending to the most powerful office on earth. Like, he wouldn't be golfing more, but I don't know that he'd be golfing less if he'd lost. Like, I think it would be roughly the same. And in this case, there's this idea that, like, I think he thought that being president was like doing the things that Trump did as a famous person before he got into politics. So like, you cut the ribbon at like a car dealership opening or something.
Right, right.
But then like whatever the presidential version of that would be. So like you do that at like an embassy. You're like, wonderful columns. And then you like go home and watch TV for 13 hours.
Yeah,
but that's not, you know, like, I don't know. The idea that like all of this stuff can just be happening and it's not my fault and I didn't know and whatever. Like, I don't know what he thinks the president is supposed to do if not some of the basic things that he's, whatever, blaming Pelosi for or something.
Well, he thought it was like his corporation, that, you know, you're just the figurehead. You get involved in all of the ceremony and you hire people to do the work, dirty and otherwise, so you don't have to do anything.
Right. And I think, honestly, if he had done that, like, I think that, you know, it wouldn't be good. I want to be clear up front here. Like, you shouldn't elect a guy who only knows, like, 200 words to be the president of the United States. That's a bad choice. But if he had been like, all right, it runs itself, I'll be here to make speeches. Otherwise, if you need me, I'm going to be, like, flat on my back in a room full of televisions, and I'll let you guys run the State Department. Like, that just isn't an option for him. I mean, this is like, it is like his corporation in the sense that, like, under him, like, the state can't really do anything anymore. The same way that his corporation is just like, it's like 10 guys in a room, you know, like, just like all these dudes that, like, got promoted from being his limo driver or body man in the 80s and now are, like, senior VP of acquisitions because they are extremely loyal to him and always call him sir. Like, that's who's in charge of the state now.
Yeah. Everybody competent has left. And I also think, too, if somebody, I don't know who, John Kelly, God knows who, 3.5 years ago had taken his phone away from him, that we might all be in a very different place. And it seems silly to suggest that Twitter is the culprit in all of this. But, boy, I give it a lot of blame.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that, and I should, you know, caveat this by saying that, like, I am not the guy that should be casting the stone on the can't stop posting issue, because, like, it's not, but in the same way that, like, you know, sometimes you'll see, like, a video online of, like, a dog doing something weird, and people are like, oh, that's cute, and then someone will reply, they only do that when they're really stressed out. I think that that's, like, most people for posting is the thing that you only do when you're stressed out. And for Trump, it's, I guess, that he has always felt like he's got an opinion to share on every topic that is absolutely vital to the national discourse. And, you know, that's his right to believe that. But I think there's also a sense in which, like, the idea that people aren't listening to him or paying attention to him 24/7 is clearly just crushing.
Right. It's the attention seeking part of him that loves it. I mean, the adulation that about half of that attention is probably better for him, but he doesn't care. As long as people are looking at him, he doesn't care if it's positive or negative.
Right. And I can't really like let myself think about this, but I, you know, when we can talk about this and whatever after future awaits us later, you know, down the line, but like, the idea of what he would do if he weren't president, I think that, like, his tolerance for attention has always been weirdly really high, you know, that, like, he just wants it more than he wants basically anything else. And if he's not, you know, the main character of cable news anymore, like, I don't know what it is that he'll do, because I don't think he can get, you know, the as pure a high or as ready a supply of what he's into if he's just another guy, you know, complaining on television for half an hour at night.
Well, that's a great segue into my next question. We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. And it's this, if it ends here after one term, does anybody survive this from the Trump administration? Are there any people in that group, the gang that couldn't shoot straight, that goes on to have some sort of a career, or will they always be tainted by that association?
You know, I'd love to say that this is one that they'll carry forever, because I feel like in a lot of cases they absolutely should. But, you know, history suggests that everybody's going to kind of be fine. I mean, it's different maybe because of the fact that, like, when you look at the people that really did terrible things during George W. Bush's presidency, that they came from the establishment, you know, the conservative half of the establishment, but they were establishment figures who, you know, like the guy that wrote the torture memo is like a tenured professor of law at Berkeley. Like, that's a good job to have, and it's one he'll keep for as long as he wants it. He shouldn't have it. Mm. Like, he should, you know, be at The Hague. But that's not how, you know, it works out. But the guys that are around Trump are all these, like, a lot of the establishment people didn't go to work for him for, you know, you don't want to give him too much credit, but, like, at the beginning of his presidency. And so people like Kelly or, you know, John Bolton or any of these people that came in trying to, like, sort of force their will on him, I don't think they come out of it looking very good, but I think we're stuck with John Bolton forever. Yeesh. Like, I fully expect him to outlive me somehow. But, you know, the, like, Corey Lewandowski and, like, these just, like, sort of, like, jumped up bouncer types that, like, wound up in charge of things. Like, no, I mean, I'd hope that they wouldn't. But, you know, that seems like that's how it is in D.C. Once you get on, it's just you can never be pushed off.
Let's move to something happier, David. Are you feeling better about the Mets now? Is this sale going to go through? Are there brighter days ahead?
This is a testament to where we are, that, like, you're asking me if my childhood favorite team getting sold to a prolific financial criminal is something that makes you feel better than the thing we were talking about before. And the answer to your question is yes, very much. So there were some hangups there. I was worried somehow that our mayor would find a way to duff this, but yeah, the Mets are now owned by a guy that has enough money to own a baseball team, which is the first time that's been true for 20 years. So that's kind of nice. And I don't know. I mean, I'm really kind of anxious about the baseball offseason, just looking at some indicators and some of the early sort of moves that teams have made to just declining options that to me seem very team friendly. I mean, I know that teams across the league lost a lot of money, or at the very least are going to say they lost a lot of money this year, but I'm really worried about the retrenchment in the sport that could happen. I mean, just if every team decides to basically sit this out. That said, it's a great opportunity for an owner who has enough money to get players, because I think a lot of really good teams are going to be looking at, you know, dumping Francisco Lindor or, you know, trying to think of Nolan Arenado, that, like, guys like that who are paid very well but are great players are, you know, if a team is very much worried about, you know, making payroll or losing more money or whatever, then, you know, you could do a deal similar to the one that the Dodgers did with Mookie Betts, and that's good for the Dodgers half of that deal for sure.
By the way, I should be upset that you recently took a shot on social media at former Maine Black Bear basketball player Jim Boylan, but you were right, and it was a great line.
This had to do with the White Sox bringing in Tony La Russa. The only thing that I actually have no idea what kind of coach Jim Boylan was, beyond the fact that all of the people that I know in Chicago that care about the Bulls hated him and made him sound like a sadistic gym teacher. But he seems like, I know he was a, you know, fine college player, and if he's got any association with the state of Maine, as one in three NBA coaches somehow does, then, you know, obviously he's probably an okay guy. But yeah, the La Russa thing was, I mean, it was as pure Reinsdorf as Boylan getting a full season to coach the Bulls, but maybe a different flavor of Reinsdorf.
Our friend Alan Adams wants me to make sure to ask you if gross gas t-shirts are sweeping the country.
So this is, I guess I can contextualize this. So there's my father-in-law, like a lot of people in the part of Hancock County that he lives in, gets his natural gas from a supplier named Gross Gas is the brand. Or not a brand, I don't know, whatever. The name of the company, it's fully, it's Elmer B. Eaton Gross Gas is the full name of the company, which sounds like an even more elaborate joke, but it's not. and Every summer when we're there, my wife very patiently takes a picture of me standing next to the gross gas canister, and I send it to some friends because it says gross gas on it, which is a funny combination of words. Somebody at Defector put that image on a t-shirt with my permission. This is not a prank on me. And like a kind of an alarmingly large number of them have been sold, to the point where like I'm worried about it making waves for my father-in-law and his community. like your daughter's married to the gross gas kid. We don't, and not like in the good way, not like you're going to inherit the company, like,
right,
in
right.
The, like the kid in the photo. Hasn't happened yet, but we will see. It is alarming to know that there's people that I don't know that own that t-shirt. Like, that just shouldn't be.
I don't know. It's I haven't ordered mine yet, but it's very tempting. But
I've heard it's very soft. Like, it's a comfy tee.
Well, if it's a comfy tee with gross gas and you, then there's no question that I need one.
Yep. You could always wear it inside out, I guess, is just what I'm saying.
Well, that defeats the whole purpose there. But then that's the world we live in these days is defeating our purposes. How will you spend your election night, David?
Medicated.
that is the correct answer.
Serious way. Nothing that you need to worry about. But yeah, I mean, our plan is to avoid the screens for as much as possible. It's crazy to think that my friends used to routinely just like have people over on election night to drink beers and watch returns on TV and stuff like that. And not just because those people now like have children and all live in Minneapolis and I can't see them anymore, but because like this is not fun and I'm not looking forward to it and it's not a party for me. So I don't know. I mean, my guess is that we will watch a couple of episodes of some streaming program on Amazon and make an elaborate dinner. And then like at some point I will, plunge in and, have a lot of scotch if I need it.
Yeah, back when the celebration might go awry if the wrong guy got elected, there was bad enough, but you could still have a good time and enjoy watching the history of it and the numbers. But, you know, when the option now is the apocalypse, it's much less fun, I find.
Right, and you can't have people over anyway. I mean, everything's right. Gone. That's the part of it that I tried to get at this in the last couple of things I wrote about Trump, and it's hard to do it in a way that doesn't make it sound maybe it is the problem is me. But that just, like, everything that should be something other than Trump is just Trump now. That, like, we don't have, like, all of the culture is just, like, now it's just politics. It's just this one guy on TV, like, wearing an overcoat, complaining about, like, Twitter's algorithm all the time. And I mean, it's not just that I miss my friends and miss going to restaurants and bars. I mean, I miss all that terribly. But, like, I miss anything else. You know, like, just anything but that. So, we'll see. I mean, it would be nice if there was, like, I don't know, a regular season NBA game on, like there ordinarily would be. Like, that is, I think, what would be the ideal, viewing for election night. It's just, like, the Hawks versus the Kings.
Well, without that, the scotch sounds pretty good to me. So
that would be a part of the Hawks game.
I join you in that, David. We appreciate it as always, and we'll get together with you on the other side. And
yeah, good luck to all of us. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Hopefully, come out of the darkness here and can talk about other stuff down the road.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, thanks, David.
Yep, have a good one.
Bye. Be well, David Roth, Defector.com with us on Downtown. I do need one of those shirts.